Hello and welcome to another JP's podcast with me, JP. Catherine Baird got in touch with me via email jpdevlin@me.com. Catherine wanted to tell me about her collection of postcards. And they're not just any ordinary postcards. These are postcards sent from one person to another, but written in Pitman shorthand. Catherine has put some of her collection in a book that she's got out at the moment called 50 Mysterious Postcards by Catherine Baird. I have to say that Catherine gave me a copy of her book and she has inscribed something on the inside. It's in shorthand, so I have no idea what it says. It's just a series of squiggles to me, but I hope it's nothing rude.
I've got roughly about 370 postcards with messages written in Pitman shorthand. They're all written in what we call the golden age of the postcard, which was the early part of the 20th century. And I've been collecting them since I got the first one in 1984. And it's still my favourite one. It's a postcard of Hubber Holme Church. And it says on the front of the postcard, in shorthand, "I am coming home on Sunday afternoon." So when I first saw this, I thought, oh, that's quite interesting. Yes, I was at a postcard fair. And I thought, yeah, I'll buy that. I can read the shorthand. And then on the reverse, I could see it's posted in 1905. And it was what was written on the reverse that really got me hooked into collecting, because part of the message says, "I am writing this in shorthand because they always read what is on postcards at the post office here." I thought that was it. That was it. Well, actually, so that was the first one. And I got that in, I think, 1984.
The name and address isn't in shorthand because the postman wouldn't be able to read.
The person who sent it has written her name in full, in longhand, and she was Annie Tennant.
And she has very beautiful
handwriting. Yes, yeah. And in fact, this is quite a key thing, because if somebody has got very beautiful handwriting, their shorthand's normally beautiful as well.
Well, that's interesting you say that, because I can't read shorthand, but to me that's just a lot of squiggles.
Yeah,
but that particular one you say is very beautifully written.
It is very beautifully written. Most of them aren't. People have developed their own shorthand outlines over time. So that's one challenge of transcribing, actually, in that it can be extremely difficult to read.
So you saw this one and you bought this postcard.
Yes.
And this kicked off this collection that
this
you had.
This mad collection, that's right. And to start off with, I had to go around postcard fairs and antique shops and ask postcard dealers if they had any, which they didn't usually have. Nowadays, I buy all the postcards online. So most of the collection I've probably collected during the last 10 years or so. This one here, this one's Manchester Cathedral, and it was posted in 1905. I really like this because, for one thing, it's very formal in its style. It starts off, "Hope you are enjoying your holiday in company with your young lady."
Oh no, we're intrigued already.
Yes, yes. "If the weather is anything like what it is here, all should be well, so far as atmospherical conditions are concerned." Rather like that. "I'm glad to say all is well with me and mine. This is a typical Manchester scene, although I must confess there are parts in the vicinity which are very nice. The corporation is a go-ahead one, and many nice parks have recently been bought for the public benefit." Mm-hmm. That's rather nice. And then another one, this one here. This is Weston-super-Mare. It's from... now this is interesting, because it was obviously put into an envelope. So you haven't got the stamp on there or the name and address of who it's going to. and it's dated 1914, and it's obviously to his sweetheart. So it says, "My darlingest one, my own beautiful little girl, just a line in the hope that you will receive it tonight." Oh, that's another thing, of course, in that you could post something in these early days of the postcards, and you'd know it would get there the same day.
That's amazing,
isn't it? Yeah. So he's hoping that she'll get it tonight to say that I'm quite myself again this morning, darling. I feel as fit as a fiddle. I've eaten a big breakfast of bacon and egg, and then a huge piece of toast and 2 cups of coffee. As you can see, it's written in pencil, and it's survived a very long time. The date on it is 1914, and it's quite tricky to read, actually. He says, "I do feel well and fit this morning, and it is due, of course, to taking care of myself yesterday. I had a basin of hot bread and milk for supper, so that I have had every attention. All that is the matter with me is that I shall have to take care of my throat so as not to have a cough. My head is perfectly clear now." In fact, a lot of, one feature on a lot of these early postcards is that people were very often ill. And there's very often mention of, you know, they've stayed in bed because they had a cold. And then, of course, also the people who had flu.
You saw that first postcard in the postcard shop,
yes,
and you noticed the shorthand. So I'm taking it you can do shorthand.
Yes, that's right. And in fact, 50 years ago, I was learning shorthand myself. And my teacher was, she was the most wonderful teacher. Her name was Mrs. Hill. And she was like a whirlwind. She would just come through the classroom door right immediately. We had to be ready for her because she would go straight into the lesson. There was no messing about. And every second of that lesson, we would be learning shorthand. And we learnt the theory for the first term. I was on a medical secretarial course, which was 2 years course.
So that's why you
and
were doing it?
Why I was doing it. So it took the first term to learn the theory, and then it was all building on that and concentrating in the second year on the medical terminology. And she was a great inspiration to me. And then I went back to her. I think I'd been working as a medical secretary for a couple of years, and I went back to evening classes to a course that she ran for people who wanted to teach shorthand. So she also taught me how to teach shorthand. And I'm pleased to say she's still going strong.
Just looking at the shorthand in these postcards here, it's to me it's very alien. It means
nothing. Yes.
So learning it.
Yes.
I mean, is it like learning a language? When you talked about theory there, first of all, how do you learn it?
Well, it's phonetic.
Mm-hmm.
So the first lesson, you learn the first 6 consonant sounds, which are P, B, T, D, Ch, J. And literally, it's just time after time writing the outlines for P, B, T, D, Ch, J, page after page of them. So it has to be automatic, so that when I hear the sound P, the outline for P in Pitman shorthand comes immediately into my head.
And what is that?
I'll show you. So it's a line which is written. It's a light pencil line. Well, most people use pencil to start with. And it's just a light line which goes down.
Just a diagonal.
Yeah, line. Yeah. I had an auntie who lived to be 101, Auntie Barbara. And when she was in her 90s, she told me that she'd learnt Pitman shorthand as a teenager. She'd never used it in her working life, never had to. And then she said to me, I do remember it, she said, per, ber, ter, der, cher, cher.
Sorry, give me that again. Per, per, der, I forgot the rest.
So it's very boring. It demands a lot of commitment because you have to practice again and again and again. There's no substitute for practicing. And because it's phonetic, you have to be hearing the sound as you write the outline. And it has to be automatic. So by the end of the first year, I got a certificate for writing Pitman at 120 words a minute. Now, at that speed, you're not thinking about it. Literally, it's just happening.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of muscle memory, if you like.
So the building blocks, again, you talked about those consonant sounds. What are the other basic building blocks that you
the
have?
The other things, the vowel sounds. So at the end of the very first lesson, I would have taught you perpa, tutta, chutja, and the sign for the vowel sound A, which is a dot, a heavy dot, in a certain position. And then you'd be able to write words like paid, day, age, all those, like you say, building blocks.
A phrase like the rain in Spain falls mainly on the plain. When you hear that, what are you thinking in terms of what's what?
Yes, I can see it. And I can see that there's a little phrase for on the. So we have phrases, well, and short forms. Everything is designed to make it quicker to write. Sir Isaac Pitman, who devised Pitman shorthand initially in 1837, his phrase was, time saved is life gained.
Nice.
Isn't it? I think we would call him now a workaholic, because he was improving on that all through his life from 1837 onwards. He died in 1897. And I think nearly up to his deathbed, he was still improving, which is quite remarkable. And in fact, the shorthand that I learnt, which is the version is called Pitman New Era, that only came in 1922. So the shorthand that I am transcribing on the old postcards, that's actually slightly different to what I learnt.
When I'm talking to people like you here, Catherine, and when I have been over the years doing interviews, I'm listening to people, but I'm always in my head editing. So I'm thinking, there's a word I can take out or a sentence. So when you're talking to people, are you thinking in terms of the shapes of
I used to. I did used to. And in fact, I remember I was teaching a shorthand beginners class many years ago in the 1980s. And I said to them, when you are in a shop, you're not allowed to buy anything unless you can visualise the shorthand outline for that item. And of course, they came back the following week and they said, oh, gosh, that was, you know, it was just so challenging. And they used to say to me, oh, we can't get to sleep at night for thinking all our thoughts are in shorthand. But actually, that's how it has to be able to write automatically. And somebody said to me recently, well, can you write swear words in Pitman shorthand?
I was going to ask you that one.
Well, yes, you can, because you can write anything. You can write in a foreign language. You can write in a language that you don't actually know yourself, as long as you can hear it.
So if I said something like, You
Oh yes, easily. Yeah, I can see all that. Yeah, no problem. I could write that really quickly, no problem. I wouldn't have to think about it. I've also bought some shorthand diaries as well. There's one here that I bought in 2015, and it's very large. On the front it says Pitman's Shorthand and Typewriting Yearbook and Diary for 1894. And it was kept by a 16-year-old boy, and he's written his name in the front of the diary. He had a very long name, actually. Edmund Eardley Gordon Haywood, St. Ives, Cornwall. And I transcribed his diary over a very long period of time. It's extremely difficult to read it. He was a weekly boarder at a very small private school called Hale Grammar School near St. Ives in Cornwall. And it's mostly about things that he got up to at school. None of it particularly secretive, I have to say, because people always expect when something's written in shorthand that it's going to be quite lurid, but it isn't.
Oh, that's a shame.
Same with the postcards, actually. But it was very interesting to read what his life was like on a daily basis. He was learning Pitman shorthand, and that's why he was keeping this diary. He himself had been born in Australia, and he'd come over here when he was about 8 years old with his mother and stepfather. And I did a lot of research into his life. And it wasn't long after he kept this diary that he went back to Australia and he trained in mining and ended up in a place called Zeehan in Tasmania. I've got a photo here of him.
Oh, how did you get the photograph?
The original's in a museum in Tasmania, and I've had permission from them to share that. I've got a website based on his 1894 diary, which has a transcript of the diary and information about him.
You never got in touch with his family or anything?
He didn't marry. He died in 1950 in Tasmania. And I have had contact with a member of his family, actually, which was very nice, of course. And they, of course, have had access to the transcript of the diary and all the information about him and his life. We're very pleased to have that, of course. So that took me a long, long time to do that. I had to do it very slowly because...
So that's transcribing a whole year's diary entry.
Yeah, And then I also have transcribed three little diaries belonging to a woman in the Second World War. In the case of Winifred's diaries, a lot of what she's writing in there is about her housework. And I think the main reason for it was to actually keep a record of which rooms she'd cleaned and when, which is rather sweet. But then also within that, of course, especially leading up to the start of the war in 1939 and later, she does record how she's affected by that. She was very worried about her husband Arthur joining the RAF and how much she'd miss him. And during the Birmingham Blitz in 1940, she records the bombs dropping, about having to go in the shelter, about the relationship with her neighbours as well. There's a lot of detail in there. This is from March 1940. Up 7:30, did both hearths up and dining room. So that sort of thing is quite common. At the start of the day, she worked as a teleprinter operator and shorthand typist. And she would do her housework in the morning, she'd go to work, she'd do the full day's work, then she'd go back home and do more housework.
Well, she was a busy woman. Yeah.
She was busy, yeah. I was so pleased that I was able to send the diaries to one of her sons. It was the loveliest thing. I'm currently transcribing a diary from 1946. I'm going to show you
that.
That's
a tiny diary.
It's tiny,
Works well for a shorthand.
Yeah, exactly. But look at it. It's like several spiders have written over that.
Are there life stories every day there?
No, not really. Well, it's written by somebody called Peter. He's in the RAF in 1946. And one day I hope to be able to reunite this with, say, his children or grandchildren. I've been toiling away at this because it's really difficult. His shorthand's quite tricky. And also he squashed it into these little spaces. So that doesn't make it any easier. But if we look at, say, today's... let's see what he wrote today, on this day in 1946. He usually writes what time he got up. Yes, up 7:20, had wash and shave, breakfast, cleaning up, etc. Washed hair, mending socks. There we go. So it's that sort of level.
One of the interesting things about it, Catherine, is I would have assumed that the shorthand would have been maybe wrongly, would have been used much more by women because they were doing secretarial work. But actually, it's mostly men in these postcards.
Yeah, it started off with just men. Originally, in Victorian times, they would have been taking down court proceedings, parliamentary proceedings, sermons, and then gradually using it in offices and then transcribing what had been dictated. Mm-hmm. And then there was the first International Congress of Shorthand in 1887. And at that, a lady called Miss Kensett, she presented a paper called Shorthand for Women. And that was the first indication I had that women were starting to use it. So it was definitely men who were using it most commonly. Women were starting to work in offices in that latter part of the 19th century. But when I learnt, for example, which was in the 1970s, then it was all women taking secretarial courses and expecting to do shorthand. Men who wanted to be journalists, and this is still the case, would expect to learn shorthand, now more commonly T-line than Pitman. But yes, I never taught shorthand to anybody who was male. So things did change dramatically.
For secretaries' training, this would have been a crucial part of their training, shorthand. You would have had to be able to do it.
You had to do shorthand. Yeah. Shorthand and typing went together, and the third branch would have been office practice. So, you know, how to use a spirit duplicator.
A what?
Oh, you don't want to know. I can smell it now, but oh dear, yeah. That was before the days of photocopiers.
Actually, I do think I remember that. Yeah. That was that the one with the winding photocopier? I remember my headmaster at school using one of those.
Yeah.
Well, tell me this, in the modern era, do people still learn shorthand now?
In some parts of the world, Pitman is still being taught and is very popular, particularly in India, for example. I've only found that out quite recently. In this country, I don't think there's much Pitman being taught at all. It's mostly T-line. And when I was training to teach, I qualified in 1983. And at the end of that course, we were told, oh, by the way, you need to know about word processors. And we had, I think, half a day spent on a word processor. And then a few years later, we were told, oh, yeah, Pitman's going out now. You need to learn T-line.
So is T-line so, very different, is it?
Yeah, that's based on handwriting. The basics of it is outlines based on handwriting rather than phonetics.
That's quite interesting, the way it's sort of dying out then, I suppose.
Yes, yeah. People do call it a dying art. Not with me, of course, because I'm still transcribing it, and I'll still write the odd note to myself.
Do you do your shopping list in shorthand?
Yeah, sometimes, yeah.
You said there are people sometimes describe it as a dying art.
Yes.
I mean, when you look at these postcards and the shorthand, do you see it as art in a way?
Yeah, it's very beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. The nicest shorthand is very beautiful, and I'll give you an example of that. It's a postcard of Miss Marie Studholme. Here she is. People did collect postcards of actresses in the Golden Age, and she, I think, was the most popular of those. There she is, looking very beautiful, and there's a message underneath her picture which says, I think this is the position you said you would like, is it, Bert? And then there's a rather nice loving message on the reverse from Bert, written to his dear little sweetheart. And you can tell from, you've already commented about handwriting, his handwriting's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And his shorthand is very beautiful.
What is it about it?
It's so precise. It's small. It's beautifully written. It's accurate. He's written in some of the diphthong signs to make it easier for his sweetheart to read it. And it's just altogether lovely. That's the most perfect shorthand that I have on a postcard. I just think it's beautiful.
It's delving into people's lives,
yes,
by collecting these postcards, isn't it?
Yes, I feel a huge sense of responsibility, to be honest. And I have got some which I wouldn't share with anybody else, which are very private, and I keep them separately.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So they're very private postcards from one person to another, written in shorthand.
Yes.
Are they things about love and relationships, mostly, I suppose?
From one woman to another.
Right.
And I know the name of the person they're sent to, and it's a very unusual name.
Mm-hmm.
So it would be easily identifiable. And I just keep the, I keep those, because I can't throw them away.
Yeah.
But I've kept those separately.
But you keep their secret safe,
yes,
if you like.
Yes, their secret safe with me.
Are you glad you picked up that postcard in 1984?
Oh, yes. I'm so glad I picked that up. It took me ages to find the second one. I can't remember when I got the second one, but it could have easily been over a year later. Went to postcard fairs, and I'd be going round to each postcard dealer and saying, do you have any postcards with messages in shorthand? And usually they'd say no. It's still a thrill to find one, actually. It's still really exciting. It's just the best thing. Yeah, that doesn't leave me.
Thank you, Catherine. And Catherine's book, 50 Mysterious Postcards by Catherine Baird, is out now. And don't forget, if you've got a story you'd like to tell, just drop me a line, jpdevlin@me.com. And you never know, you might appear on a future podcast. Until the next time, I'll see you then.